Now, our study tonight is in the 18th chapter. In the 17th chapter, last Sunday night, we presented the view that the harlot is a symbol of lust, of all that's lustful and seductive and enticing in the world. Some think that the harlot symbolizes the Roman Catholic Church or apostate religion. I don't think so. I think that's symbolized by the beast that came up out of the earth, had the two horns like a lamb, but spake as a dragon. And later on, that beast was called a false prophet, symbolizing false religion. So we have two great enemies of the Lord and his cause, the beast out of the earth, out of the sea rather, symbolizing power, the power of a great political empire that opposed the church in the form of the Roman Empire at that time, to symbolize all power, he might seek to oppose the kingdom of God. The beast out of the land, the earth, was or symbolized false religion, paganism at that time, but in a system of false religion that might be backed by power and seek to destroy the kingdom of the Lord. Now, the church has not only these two enemies of the Lord and the church, but also this harlot is a rival to the church. I think, as I said, she symbolizes lust of the world. Now, that would be consistent. That would be consistent with John's statement in 1 John 2:15 to 17. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Now the 17th and 18th chapters present or sum up that great principle here in a symbolic picture that the Lord presents unto us. Now if that be correct, my position be correct, then this chapter tonight that we are studying symbolizes the destruction, the ultimate destruction and failure of all that rests simply on lust. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. Now, we pointed out also from Nahum, the third chapter, the first three or four verses, verse 4 especially, that there Nineveh is spoken of as a harlot. Now, Nineveh was a great harlot of conquest and of sorcery. Well, of course, that is prompted by lust, the lust and desire to conquer other nations or lands. Then, in the 47th chapter of Isaiah, we have there Babylon as a mistress, given over to pleasures. Well, these pleasures were the pleasures of lust, the gratifying of the lust of the flesh of the individual. In the 23rd chapter, verses 15 and 17 of Isaiah, we have Tyre, the great city of commerce, symbolized as a harlot. So here's the harlot of commerce. Now, that doesn't mean that commerce within itself is wrong. It isn't. It's good. It has great benefits to the whole world because it transfers things from one part of the country to another. But when commerce is used only to gratify the pleasures, that which the money can buy, the pleasures, and those things of the flesh, then that's what when it's wrong, and that's what's symbolized in this picture we're studying tonight. Then in the first chapter of Isaiah, and I think in verse 21, Jerusalem is spoken of there as a harlot. Behold, how the city here, Jerusalem, has become a harlot. She symbolizes the religious harlot. Well, why would a religion take the form of a harlot, as these others have? Well, it would be through the lust of the flesh, the fact that people want something that gratifies flesh, and that's what the Jews were after when they turned to idolatry, was the gratifying of the flesh there. So I believe that in this harlot, you have a synthesis of these three harlots and the mistress of the Old Testament who are combined here in this one, the city of Rome, which is the symbol of all that was lustful and seductive and enticing. So last Sunday night, we talked about the harlot herself, the identification of it. Now tonight, the fall of the harlot, the judgment of the harlot, which, if I'm correct, as I say, in my understanding of what the harlot symbolizes, then here you have a picture of the ultimate fall and destruction of anything that is prompted by or grows out of or developed through lust. And of course, that's of the world, the lust of the flesh, eye and pride of life. Well, let's look tonight then at what we have here in this judgment of God against the old harlot here, against the of Babylon here, the harlot. Right, verse 1. After these things, now that's not so much in time as on the development here of the picture that John sees. In the 17th chapter, he saw this harlot riding upon a scarlet-colored beast, and the scarlet-colored beast was over all of the nations and peoples and languages of the world. And so you have then, she symbolized Rome over all at that time. But Rome then symbolized the lust that we're talking about. So I saw after these things, I saw another angel coming down out of heaven, having great authority, and the earth was lightened with his glory. Now this indicates that here is an angel of unusual power or authority given to him by God. And to him, to this angel is given the responsibility of announcing now the judgment of the great harlot, the fall of the world of lust. And he cried with a mighty voice, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. The Babylon the Great, and it become a habitation of demons, and a hold of every unclean spirit, and a hold, that is a prison, of every unclean and hateful bird." Now we had the Babylon introduced back in the 14th chapter and verse 8. Now that was the first introduction of the fall of Babylon. And another, a second angel followed, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, that hath made all the nation to drink of the wine of the wrath of a fornication." Well, we discussed that a few Sunday nights ago. And here is God's declaration that Babylon, this Babylon, is doomed to fall. Now, it hadn't fallen at that time. But when God determines that a thing is going to be done, then he can speak of it as though it were already done, because it is certain to come to pass. So Babylon hadn't fallen at that time, but the declaration is that it was fallen because God had determined that it would be. Right? And then you have also fallen again. You have that statement again over in the 16th chapter here, that Babylon is going to fall. Read verse 19. "And the great city was divided there. The city and the nation fell, and Babylon the great was remembered in the sight of God, to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath." So lust, the world of lust, is doomed because God had declared his doom upon that particular world. So remember, and the brethren needed this at that time. Here was the great city of Rome, with all of its power and with all of its pomp and with all of its pleasures and all of its earthly glory. Well, surely that city was going to stand. God says no, because it grows out of the lust of the hearts of men. It's going to fall. It's doomed to fall and to destruction. So twice now he declared that, and now comes the time when that judgment is pronounced upon this great Babylon of the Revelation letter. So he moves on now, but now notice it's going to become a habitation of demons and a hold of prison for unclean spirits and the very unclean and hateful birds. Well, lust is really the dwelling place of these things. What he's describing here in these is the spirit of those individuals that yield and give themselves under the lust of the flesh. That here is the spirit of it, illustrated in these two or three things, the hateful bird and the demon spirits and all that. Now these are simply simply symbolize the spirit of the world of lust, the ultimate consequence of it. You see it in your world today all about you. Here's a world today dominated by lust and covetousness and desire and all of that. Well, what is the spirit and the character of it? It's individuals held in prison to that, and it's a spirit of that which is unclean and contrary to the will of God. It's a good, very graphic picture, I think, that describes in the symbolic language the very thing that we see all about us in the world today. For by the wine of the wrath of a fornication, all the nations are fallen, and the kings of the earth committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth waxed rich by the power of her wantonness. Now, by what did the nations wax rich, and the merchants wax rich, and the earth here, the kings commit fornication? They committed fornication with the harlot, the symbol here with Rome, the symbol of all that's lustful and seductive, in order to feather their own nest to gratify their own desires, that seek for pleasure and those things. To me, the picture is very graphic, and I think the understanding is rather clear here, that this is not a religious picture. This is a picture of the world that seeks after the pleasures and the power, that is, their own power, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life, their own vanity and their own pride, and these things. It's a picture of the world that seeks after that. And so the kings of the earth commit fornication with this harlot in order to have that. So do the merchants, and wax rich by the power of her wantonness. By the very fact that this harlot seeks is a symbol of pleasure, and of those things, why, they wax rich by selling and trading and with her and committing fornication with her. Now he moves on from that. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come forth, my people, out of her, that you have no fellowship with her sins, that you receive not of her plagues. Now that's not a call to individuals to leave the literal city of Rome. But if they left the city of Rome, they'd still be in a world of lust. So what he's calling the brethren to do, the saints to do, come ye out from this world of worldliness and of lust and of pride and pleasure and these things. Things that we talked about this morning, you put off the old, you put on the new, renewed day by day in spirit, in a spiritual way. So what God is calling, you have that expression many times in the Old Testament. You remember that God called Abraham, get out of Ur of Chaldea and come into a land that I will show thee here, make of you a great nation. Later on, he sent Abraham, he sent his angel down to Sodom and Gomorrah to call to individuals there to come out. Well, only Lot and his two daughters, the only three that did, that had been 10 righteous persons, the city would have been spared, to come out of Sodom, come out of that. Then later on, when the Jews were in Babylon through Isaiah and also in Jeremiah, come ye out from the midst of Babylon there. Well, of course, here was a literal city of Babylon in which they would be captive there. But what he's really calling upon them to do is to come out from the idolatry symbolized by Babylon. Come out of all the influences of that Babylon of that time. Well, now that's what God was calling upon these people to do here. Come ye out from among them. Come out of Babylon. Paul said this similar thing, 2 Corinthians 7 and verse about 1. Everyone that hath this hope. No, just before that, when God says, come ye out from among them, be separate, saith the Lord, and touch no unclean thing, and I'll receive you. I'll be to you a father, and you shall be unto me sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. Having therefore these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all defilement of flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. 2 Corinthians 6, verses about 17 through 7, 1 there. So you have the same call that God is calling his people today, to come out of this Babylon, this fellowship and association with this harlot, which simply symbolizes all of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. These are the things that enticed and seduced Eve in the Garden of Eden. She saw the fruit was good to look upon, or rather good for food, is the light to the eyes, to be desired to make one wise. Right? The devil said, when you eat of this fruit, you'll be like God. And so here was a desire to be like God in that. Well, all of that appealed to the lust of this woman. And what the word lust means, strong desire. The strong desires of this woman. Well, Paul speaks in Ephesians 2, 1 and 2 there, of the desires of the flesh and of the mind. So lust is the strong desire of the flesh and of the mind of an individual that leads him into that particular realm of the world of lust, but he deceived in that. We talked this morning from Ephesians 4 there about the lust of deceit. That lust deceives. Deceit uses lust there to entice us. So we're actually deceived by these lusts in thinking here that now this is what we want. This is going to gratify. I'll be satisfied and content and complete if I just gratify these desires. But the end of that is what? Here, the spirit of it, these demons and unclean spirit, birds and all of that, here's what you really have when you get through. And what God's trying to say in this picture here of what he has said over and over in simple language throughout the Old and the New Testament. that these things deceive. So come ye out that you receive not of a plague, that you don't receive the consequence of living to the gratifying of the lust of the flesh and of the mind. This is what God's trying to tell his people, and trying to picture it to us here in this very graphic picture of an old harlot that seeks to entice by the clothing she was wearing there, the silk and all of that sort of thing, and the pearls and the jewels and all of that. She seeks to entice and seduce to commit fornication with her in yielding to those lusts that we have with us. Now, Paul said to crucify the flesh with the passion and the lust thereof. So that's the solution to it. For her sins have reached even unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquity. Now, the Old Testament, you have a number of times where the sins of the people have reached up to heaven. That is, they've been piled up there, or they've piled upon pile until, figuratively speaking, they've reached heaven, and God can't tolerate it any longer. So when he can't, why, consequences are inevitable, that his judgments fall. So God hath remembered her iniquities. Render unto her even as she rendered, and double unto her the double according to her works. In the cup which she mingled unto her double. How much soever she glorified herself and waxed wanton, so much give her torment and mourning. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and a no widow, and shall no wise see mourning. And what does he mean, render unto her double? I think I've explained that a number of times. I'm going to go back to a couple of passages in the Old Testament. Isaiah, the 40th chapter, and verse 2. Isaiah introduces that thought there. And also over in 61, we'll look at it over there. But here in the 40th chapter in verse 2, notice what God says here. Speak ye comfortably unto Jerusalem, and cry unto her that her warfare is accomplished, that her iniquity is pardoned, that she hath received of Jehovah's hand double for all her sins. Now keep that one in mind. Then turn to the 61st chapter, I believe it is, and verse 7 here, when he said, instead of your shame, you shall have double, and instead of dishonor, they shall rejoice in their portion. Therefore in their land shall they possess double, everlasting joy shall be unto them. Now, what does he mean by that? Does an individual get twice as much punishment as sin deserves? Does an individual get twice as much joy as his suffering deserves? No. And here, we're going to look at the cup of the harlot in just a minute. No, the idea is this. Here you have here a fulcrum, and you have a scale here. And you come down, and here on this side, you have your scale here. You have your scale over here on this side. And over here, then, you have a pound over here. Now you have 1 pound over here. Now, if you're going to balance the scales, what do you do? You double that. Right? Now you have a pound over here. What you have done here is simply balance the scale. Here is 1 pound. Over there, you double that in order to balance it. Now, that was true here of sin and of judgment. Right? Now, the judgment was commensurate with the sin. It balanced the scale. Here over here was the joy commensurate with the suffering. In the 61st chapter, here was the suffering that they went through. Here is the joy over here now that balances the scale. Well, that's what he said about the harlot. And for here was a cup. Fill up the cup. The cup was half full. Now fill the cup up here with judgment. Now notice as he continues that. In verse 7, how much soever she glorified herself and waxed wanton, so much give her of torment and mourning. So in other words, give her commensurate with that which she has done. And then he goes on to say, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and no widow, there shall be no wise see mourning. Therefore in one day shall her plagues come, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. So the point here is now, when he says, have no fellowship with her sins, God's going to remember her iniquities, render unto her double. Now, who's he talking? Not the saints. The saints are not to do that. I think it's those destroyers that God selected. For instance, back here in the 17th chapter, and verses about 13 and 14, here were the 10 kings who gave their authority over to the beast there, to the Roman Empire. Right now then, these are the ones that hate the harlot, And God's going to use them as the instruments of her destruction. But the whole idea is that a lust always brings its own destruction here. So it'll destroy the individual. That's the point I think God is pointing out in this. So now then you fill up here. Render unto her double according to her works. In the cup which she mingled unto her double. Right, so the figure there then, instead of scales as in Isaiah, right here the here's the cup here, or the goblet, or whatever you want to call it, and it comes up here, and now then, alright, so here now, she's mingled it now, you're going to fill it up. Double, here's her sin, right, and here's the judgment. So it simply fills up the cup of her iniquity. She's filled the cup with her iniquity there. Now then, God's going to fill it up with judgment. He's going to fill it, balance the scale, or complete the filling up of the covenant, of the cup rather. So this is the point there, not that God's going to give somebody double judgment for what he has done. It's going to be to balance the scale. God's going to, it's going to be commensurate with what the individual should have had. So therefore in one day, that's in just a short time, shall the plagues come, death, mourning, and famine. These are the plagues that will come upon. These are the things that come to the individual who lives the life of lust, who spends his life simply gratifying the desires of the flesh and of the mind. Why, in the end, here is death and mourning and famine. Disappointment. This idea of living after the flesh, as the world is doing today, and we see it all about us. Why, the ultimate end is not what it looks like. The ultimate end isn't that in order to get that and think how great life and how much fun we're having and all that. How does it turn out? It doesn't turn out that. They don't show that. They don't show the ultimate consequence of it. They show the having the good time and all of that. Not what eventually comes. All right, now, for now notice first, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judged her. God is stronger than any other power to resist. No power can resist the judgment of God. And the king, now notice those now you have, beginning with verse 9, you have the different ones who are involved here. Now first are the kings. And the kings of the earth who committed fornication and lived wantonly, or that means luxuriously there, with her, shall weep and wail over her when they look upon the smoke of her burning, standing afar off for the fear of a torment, saying, woe, woe, the great city, Babylon the strong city, for in 1 hour is thy judgment come. Now, as I said last Sunday morning, from Sunday night, from the 17th chapter. Now, these kings are not grieving over the fall of this city here, in the symbol here. But it's because of what they are deprived of, what their loss is. It's a selfish grief over this. We'll see that in the merchants and the others here. But now notice here, they had committed in the literal picture was that the kings of the earth had committed fornication with Rome because of the advantage that they gained by it. The wealth that they got by. What's been the ground of the nation for the last 40 years since World War II, committing economic and political fornication with Washington, is for what they could get out of it. I don't think that these nations love Washington, United States, any more than these kings love the old Harley. What they wanted was what they could get by making these alliances and agreements there, all this giveaway stuff. What do we call it? Lend lease. Really, we turned out to be nothing but just giveaway. Now we've got a $2 trillion debt on our heads here because of all of this mismanagement and misdirection and gratifying or serving the old heart of the lust here, both the foreigners and ourselves here. It's working both ways. So people here were made rich out of it also. But now notice here, woe to the great city. And the merchants. Now here, the second group of the merchants. And the merchants of the earth weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. Now here with the fall of Rome, here their ships are laded with goods, but nobody to buy it. And nobody got any money to buy it. So here now they're mourning, for there's nobody to buy their goods. Right now when the consequence of extravagance and luxury and lust comes, and it eventually comes, there'll come a collapse to this nation. You can't have a $2 trillion debt over you and ever pay it or ever come out of it. So what'll be the... Now, here with the fall of Rome, here their ships are laded with goods, but nobody to buy it. And nobody got any money to buy it. So here now they're mourning for the nobody to buy their goods. Right now, when the consequence of extravagance and luxury and lust comes, and it eventually comes, there'll come a collapse to this nation. You can't have a $2 trillion debt over you and ever pay it or ever come out of it. So what will be the consequence? It'll be ultimately a fall. Now that's come to all the nations in the past. We're no different from them. We're going to suffer the same thing here. All right? For now then, and when it falls, you can let, they talk about this representing a church, or you can let the Roman Catholic Church fall tomorrow or any of the rest of them, it wouldn't make a bit of difference. But you let a great economic power like this one, or Russia, let that become absolutely bankrupt, and think of the people going to be affected by that. And this is what John is seeing here, and God is telling us here. Now notice what the merchandise he described. Now look at it. We'll just look at it hurriedly. Only several things that might need explaining. We'll just mention as we go along. Now merchandise of gold and silver and precious stone and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and all fine wood. That was a sweet smelling wood out of it, for which they made fine furniture and things of that nature. And every vessel of ivory, and every vessel made of most precious wood, and of brass and iron and marble, and cinnamon and spice and incense and ointment and frankincense and wine and oil, fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and merchandise of horses and chariots and slaves, that's bodies, and souls, that's the lives of men. Right now look at that. Except that for the wheat and the cattle, something to eat and to wear, that all the rest of that are items of luxury. That's the point there. Here are the items of luxury in which they traded. Now, where is the great profit? The great profit today is not simply in selling a loaf of bread and a piece of meat down here, but it's in these big things that go to make up the luxury life of the people. That's where the real money is made today, and those fine buildings and all of that. All right, you think about that now. So here, as you look at the things, and if you really want to get a good picture of this, read Ezekiel 26, 1 through 28, and about the middle of the chapter. Now, 2.5 chapters. Tyre was the great city of commerce of the Old Testament. And Ezekiel likens Tyre to a beautiful ship here in the sea, with a fine mast here, and linen sails and all of that. Very luxury. It illustrated Tyre as a great commercial city. But Tyre went down. And it tells now then, enumerates most of these things along with others, of what was involved in that trade there, what they lost there. Right? So this picture here is very similar to that one that Ezekiel describes, except he uses a symbol there of a ship at sea, where John is using that of a harlot here, the symbol of lust, of all that's lustful and seductive. Well, you move on into this, not hurriedly now. Now he moves on to say, and the fruits which thy soul lusted after are gone from thee, and all things that were dainty and sumptuous are perished from thee, and men shall find them no more at all. That is, here's a total collapse of an economy here and of a trade that was dedicated to the gratifying of the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and not for the good it was done for them. So let me say again, that the Bible does not condemn commerce. It does not condemn trade. All of that's fine. What it condemns is the trade and the commerce motivated simply by lust, that the pleasures and the desires of the flesh may be gratified. This is the thing that he's condemning here, and that God condemned in Ezekiel there. Well, moving on now. Now the merchants. The merchants of these, now you have the kings, now the merchants of these things, who were made rich by her, shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city. Now notice, it's the great city, the strong city. But God's city is what? It's the holy city. It's the new Jerusalem. So it's a holy city as over against the strong or the great city. Now the things of the world may be great, but the things of God are holy. They are holy. They reflect the very character and holiness of God. All of them do. And weeping and stand afar off for the fear of a torment, weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city, she that was arrayed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stone and pearl, for in 1 hour, that just means a quick time, not a short time there, so great riches is made desolate, is made desolate. All right, so here are the merchants now. They've got the merchandise to sell, but nobody to buy, because the economy has collapsed. When the economy is built on lust, rather than a solid basis of honest work and toil and those things, it's going to go down. This is your picture. This nation just as sure to fall as old Rome did, and Russia's city there, Moscow, whatever it might represent, just as sure to fall as Rome did. And so any nation that is built on lust for power and greed and pleasure is bound and doomed to go down. That's just an eternal, irrevocable principle of God Almighty. So you might as well drive your peg there and camp there, because that's the way it's going to be. God has determined that. The judgment is on its way. I don't know when it'll come. Don't know how it'll come. I know judgment is inevitable when a people has given up the principles that our nation has given up, our country has given up, and I think that religion has given up, and turns them to the appeal to people on the basis of the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. That nation or that church or that people is doomed to go down. Not going to stand. And so unless we are standing for those things and contending for them and are willing to make the sacrifice of the pleasures of sin for a season in order to serve God for eternity, unless we're willing to do that, why, we're going the way of the rest of it. Does that sort of challenge us? I think it ought to. I think it should make every one of us sit up and think and take notes. When a church makes its appeal to people on the basis of the world, like these television fellows, send us $100 and God will restore it 100-fold, that'll give you 1,000 back. What's that an appeal to? And when people build their big buildings and their gymnasiums and their recreational centers and all of that as an appeal to what? The flesh. You're not going to save people by that kind of stuff. You're going to save people by the gospel of Jesus Christ, and they who would live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. God never promised us a bed of roses. He never promised us here a place in a beautiful line of the ocean here, and a fine room in there, and good food served. We just get on that thing, go right on into glory. He never promised that. Never for a minute. And when we go to the world with that kind of a thing, we're appealing to the very virtues of the old harlot. We're playing the part of a harlot to seek the brethren of the church to commit fornication with the harlot. Just like the world is doing. This is the picture God's painting. And I think it's not a beautiful picture, it's a graphic picture. Well, he moves on hurriedly. Now, here's another group, the third group. Every shipmaster and everyone that saileth any whither, and mariners, and as many as gain their living by sea, stood afar off. Now here's the shipmaster, that's the fellow that owns it. Here's the one that sailed it, they're the sailors. Here's the mariners, and the sailors there to look after it. Here are those that gain their living by it. That is, they're what you call salesmen. They sail the ships, there's salesmen there to make money. The whole thing is a money-making deal. There's nothing wrong in making money. And not the thing that's wrong. What do you want with it? What's the object of it? How am I going to use it? This is the thing God's talking about. Well, he hurries on. And they cried out as they looked upon the smoke of a burning, saying, what city is like the great city? And they cast dust upon their heads. That's an Old Testament custom you remember so often. And cried weeping and mourning, saying, woe, woe, the great city. About 4 or 5 times it's called the great city here, wherein all that had their ships in the sea were made rich by reason of a costliness, for in 1 hour is she made desolate. May take a lifetime to build up this great city and this great fortune and all that, but be taken away in an hour. Our economy can collapse. We can get up some morning here and find the whole thing in a state of total collapse. And it's 1 hour. I don't mean literal hour, but just a very short time in comparison to what it took to build it. I'm amazed at how the United States has gone down in the last 25 or 30 years. Greatest nation on earth, up till a few years ago. Now then, we're becoming a bunch of drug addicts and lascivious entertainment hounds looking for that kind of stuff. And pornography and all of that is sapping and ruining the life of this country. Few folks are getting concerned about it. Most of them are going on their merry way right on into hell without ever giving it a thought. That's what God's warning us. That's what this is about. That's what this book's about. Now notice, brother. Made that rejoice over her, thou heaven, and you saints and you apostles and you prophets, for God has judged your judgment on her. Don't rejoice here because a great city like Rome fell, or a great nation like the United States falls. Rejoice over the fact here that lust ultimately reaches its, realizes its own judgment, and the righteous receive their reward. There is a victory for those that overcome. There's a victory for it. Now comes the latter part of it. Now here's a strong angel. That's the third time we had a strong angel. Back in 5:2, before the little book, the sealed book to be opened, there's a strong angel. It cried, saying, who is able to take the book and open it? And the 10th chapter in verse 1, before John was given the little book of judgment, why, here was a strong angel that gave that to him. Now here's a strong angel that's declaring the victory that was pronounced in the sealed book and the judgment presented in the little book. There were two different books, you remember. We talked about them. Took up a stone, as it were, a great millstone. Not one of the little stones that the women used to crush the wheat with, but the great millstone here. And cast it into the sea, saying, thus with a mighty fall shall Babylon the great city be cast down and shall be found no more at all. Lust eventually reaches the end of destruction. Brings destruction, and it eventually will be destroyed. Destroy itself, destruct. It destroyed itself. And the voice, and I noticed that there are several voices, about five of them. And the voice of harpers and minstrels and flute players and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in thee. Now that's entertainment, pleasure, those things. Pleasure, that entertainment, right, gave pleasure. And nothing wrong in that good entertainment. Nothing wrong in just a righteous pleasure. God doesn't condemn that. But what he's condemning here is that type of lascivious music and stuff, such as you have on your television and on your radio, and you're hearing all the time. If you listen to it, you can always turn it off. There's a knob there. I wouldn't give a dime for either one, a radio or television, without a knob on it. On a knob, I can turn the stuff off. And they get to playing that rock music when they get to showing the lascivious pictures on that. I can go somewhere else. Turn off of that. I don't have to sit there and listen to it or look at it. Alright? But the point is here, be heard no more at all in thee. Now second, no craftsman of whatever craft shall be found any more at all in thee. That is, your economy will have collapsed. The economy ultimately comes down. And notice third, and the voice of a mill shall be heard no more at all in thee. That is, the manufacturing center, the wheat mills, and the manufacturing mills and all of that, why, they're silenced. Here's an economic collapse that comes here. Therefore, and the light of a lamp shall shine no more at all in thee. That is, there'll be no joy, there'll be no gladness in thee at all. Here, lust eventually brings its own destruction. That's what we're trying to say in this. And then the next, and the voice of the bride and the bridegroom, and the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. That is, there'll be no joyous occasion then. The wedding was always a joyous occasion with the Hebrews. Also, I think, with the Romans and with the Greeks, a very joyous occasion. And with us, it should be that. But this joy is gone. Anything built on lust is doomed to destruction. Isn't that what he's teaching? He isn't. I missed the point. He's not talking about religion. He already talked about that. He's talking now about the really great enemy, the great opponent of the church, is the world of lust. That's the thing we're fighting harder today than anything. We're not fighting political power that I'm aware of, and it's against us. We've got all kind of false religions. You don't have to give way to that. What's the real thing that's really threatening the church everywhere today? It's the world of lust. The lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. The lust of the mind and of the flesh. And these others have their strong drawing power. And these are the things I think we're really faced with today. Well, all right. For thy merchants were the princes of the earth, for with thy sorcery were all the nations deceived. With the sorcery of lust, people were deceived. If sin didn't deceive you, you wouldn't do it. We do what we do because we are deceived by it, thinking that I can get by. I can't any more than you can. You can't any more than I can. And neither one of us can. Finally. For with thy sorcery were all the nation deceived, and in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that had been slain upon the earth. Slain by what? Slain by lust. Now here, many an individual, many a saint had yielded to it and was slain that way. Many others were slain by those individuals who, through their lust, brought them to an end. But the destruction of wars and so many things that have occurred in the world have been the result of uncontrolled, strong desires of men who sought to get control of things and control them there, and individuals who are willing to be controlled what they could get out of it. You have a picture here, and I think a graphic one, of the lust of the flesh and eye and the pride of life as the great enemy and opponent of the people of God. It's ultimately brought to an end by divine judgment. Well, think about it. Think about it. I think it's something that challenges in this. So we'll give that some thought. Next Sunday night, we'll look now at the rejoicing in heaven over what is taking place here. Rejoicing among those that rejoice. The hallelujahs of heaven over the fact that God's cause is victorious. Satan's cause goes down in defeat. Let's stand together while we sing the song. Thanks again.